This is an iHeart podcast.
At PGIM, our global perspective today unlocks investment opportunities tomorrow. Our 1,400 investment professionals provide global expertise and local insights to help you navigate the complexities of a changing world. We offer a diverse range of active strategies across public and private markets to help you identify opportunities and achieve your long-term goals. PGIM, our investments shape tomorrow, today.
So, have you heard the story about the prescription plan with savings automatically built in? It's where a family of any size can feel confident the cost of their medication won't hold them back. Go to cmk.co/stories to learn how CVS Caremark helps members save just by being members. That's cmk.co/stories.
This is what the market used to sound like. Pretty complex. But today, with iShares by BlackRock, investing is easier. With over 450 ETFs, iShares gives you easy access to countless market opportunities. iShares by BlackRock. The market is yours. Visit www.iShares.com to view a prospectus, which includes investment objectives, risks, fees, expenses, and other information that you should read and consider carefully before investing. Risk includes principal loss. Prepared by BlackRock Investments, LLC, member FINRA.
Bloomberg Audio Studios. Podcasts, radio, news.
Hey there, Odd Lots listeners. You are about to hear a very special episode of the podcast. This was recorded live at our June 26th event in New York. We are talking with Charlie McElligott. He is, of course, Managing Director and Cross-Asset Macro Strategist for the Global Markets Americas business over at Nomura. We talked to him about volatility in the market. What else?
Yep. It's been a kind of extraordinary couple of months with stocks basically at all-time highs, despite so much going on in the world. What actually explains what's happening? Charlie does a pretty good job. So take a listen. Thank you so much, Charlie, for being here.
Awesome to be here. Awesome to see you guys.
So I didn't actually see where the market closed today, but like we're pretty close. Like either we're at record highs or very close to it. I didn't actually see, but it's crazy to me all that's happened in 2025 and like we're sitting here at all-time highs. It's not intuitive. You have to admit it's kind of weird.
I think the message, I'm trying to remember the last time I was with you guys, but probably the message that I was communicating at that time was the fixation and kind of the dooming with the left tail scenarios.
Yeah.
And as so often is the case, when people are not incentivized to see the world burn, which might be debatable to some.
Sure.
And you start seeing, especially with regard to, negotiating tactics and things like that, where you start getting that not quite as bad as feared scenario.
Uh-huh.
Oftentimes there's an impact, certainly with the mechanical stuff that we so often talk about, and you really underprice the less bad outcome. And there's a mechanical impact. There's a lot of, vol distribution stuff, and it creates second order impact, second order flows. I think the most fascinating two points that I would say outside of the mechanical flows that we talk about and the volatility component of this is two things. I think back to 2022, where we had our first kind of inflation-driven macro bear case, right?
Yeah.
We just started the tightening cycle. I think there was 9 or 10 months in a row of inflation upside surprises with CPI. And, the macro bear case for equities at that point was this earnings recession, where due to this price shock, it was going to impact consumption, top-line sales go lower, and so on and so forth. What ended up happening is, ironically, because of the health of the consumer, and tight employment with wages at 40-year highs, you ended up actually getting a dynamic where the corporate world operates on aggregate consumption. They operate in a nominal GDP world. And that inflation, perversely for the bears, was the earnings catalyst. And all those folks got stopped out in 2023. There is an element of that still to this day right now as it relates to earnings. Even though like nominal GDP is in a different place to a certain extent, still kind of 5%-ish. But the other point too is that as it relates to the CapEx spending uncertainty story, right? If you know, corporates don't know what they're supposed to do with their cash because of the, you know, the kind of range of outcomes with regards to, you know, where these tariffs are going to end up, the sand in the gears of the global economy. Well, the thought was, of course, you know, if corporates don't know what to be spending on, and consumers are feeling that impact as well, you're going to get this eventual drag with regards to consumption. You're going to have corporates in a bad place. You either lose the top line sales because consumers are paying through the roof, or you have to absorb those costs and your margins go lower. But what corporates have instead done have taken authorized buybacks to all-time highs. Oh. So we're not spending on, you know, R&D. We're not spending on hiring or building that new plant. We're going to buy back more stock than ever before year to date. And that, you know, if you look at corporate buyback flows as a source of demand for equities over the past 10, 15 year period, it's a magnitudes, 6, 7, 8 times magnitudes larger source of demand. So you've had these two kind of unintuitive dynamics in the market that have actually kept us higher on top of all those kind of vol scaling things that we like to talk about.
All right, so the other thing that's happened is people are back to actually selling vol. So basically betting that, you know, things will stay relatively calm. Why is that happening? It seems like a weird time to bet
there
against
so many
volatility.
Headlines. Yeah.
I think selling vol has become a new form of fixed income in a world where bonds are no longer a risk-free asset. Now, that, you know, can go wrong so many ways. In this case, the proliferation of like premium income overriding strategies within the ETF world, exotic structured products, and kind of, you know, more, I would say, you know, complicated, you know, vol selling strategies like dispersion, things like that. The number of vol suppliers out there, very short dated, it gets dealers stuffed on gamma, I always like to say. And in that sense, you know, particularly with the amount of short dated volatility selling, you know, when dealers are stuffed on gamma, it compresses the distribution of outcomes, right? If the market's moving higher, you're selling into that. Market's moving lower, you're shock absorbing. The thing that I would say back to that point about, you know, selling volatility as some sort of kind of fixed income product, back in 2022, with that tightening cycle and all the bear dooming with regards to, you know, we're going to break something, you know, such a powerful, you know, ultimately over 500 basis points of hikes. The trick was that, okay, the Fed is telling you to be short assets.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be able to sleep at night. Cash was an asset again. So, you know, market was down 30 some percent. Bonds were down simultaneously.
Did they really sell off that much?
Yeah, S&P and NASDAQ was, you know, even bigger than that, obviously, because remember, it was like this tech-centric growth kind of unwind. But what ended up happening was that, you know, the Fed was trying to create a negative wealth effect. We've talked about that before, because they couldn't impact supply-side disruption. They could only impact demand side. And by telling you to be in cash, you could sleep at night. Well, guess what? The next year, you missed a 50% rally in the NASDAQ. So what really smart marketers have done is say, well, I'm going to give you price appreciation of equities, just capped. And off the back of that too, we're going to sell out of the money calls against this. And you get this like little premium income thing. And it's, you know, they're never telling you you're shorting options. The good news is with a lot of these products nowadays, like you're not shorting crash, you're not shorting downside, but also too, sometimes they're contributing to their own demise in this kind of grinding market where you're stopping into the calls that you've been selling.
There's so much going on. I totally forgot that we had such a big sell-off in 2022. I totally forgot that there was like a 50%, like all of these things, like, oh, that actually happened. Zooming out, big picture, like it seems objectively true. You've been trading a long time. Like there are so many headlines these days and they're always changing and there's just so much to talk about. What is the trading like and how, does it feel different these days when we're just facing this constant wall of news? Is there something that changes in the sort of complexion of how people trade?
Well, there's certainly different like risk appetite regimes, risk sentiment regimes, you know, where, you know, there was a period of time, I remember in those early discussions on like zero DTE options where generally speaking at that time, coming off the back of like, you know, meme coins and and that whole like YOLO phenomenon, you know, the speculative excess peak of that kind of 2021, you know, stimmy check driven madness. that was a very different world where people were kind of like, you know, buying, you know, optionality, creating gamma squeezes, the Reddit boards, Wall Street Bets, all that jazz. Now that you're kind of settling into this world, we've been conditioned. We've been conditioned for 15 years of moral hazard, right? Central bankers intervening, obviously politicians now intervening, and this is like, you know, party agnostic with regards to the fiscal stimulus, where it has become conditioned into traders, both retail and institutional, you know, this dynamic where you have to, this is the expected behavior. You have to buy that dip and sell that reflex. Right. So you're constantly trying to like kind of triangulate and kind of sanity check yourself with regards to this reflexivity. Hmm. And, you know, like August 2nd, August 5th last year were a really interesting experiment because August 2nd, we finally got that first glimpse at what our market will eventually do this time again. Huge VAR event. In, you know, within the fixed income space, certainly, and then trickle down into all asset classes from there. It was the first time that labor, it looked like labor was cracking. And we had that, you know, 4 Z-score miss and the U rate and 2.5 Z-score miss and the non-farm payroll print. And that was after a week of already soft labor data. And that was the holy shit moment. Once the consumer goes, this whole, you know, economic miracle goes. And what that then created was this, you know, was this massive dynamic where at the end of that day, everybody said, okay, risk is dicey right now. There's going to be a lot of deleveraging off the back of this realized volatility shock. I want to go home short delta, like short the market, but I want to be short vol because vol squeezed, vol exploded that day. That was both clients and options dealers. The problem was because of all these second order impacts and deleveraging impacts and was that Nikkei on Sunday night opened down 12%. So that short vol position was going to be so smart because we always reflexively sell that, you know, and you've got to monetize your hedges in like 2 hours before people start leaning in all that vol supply. The back test says the higher vol goes, the more I have to sell. And that's that sell the vol rip by the dip. Well, those people got their arms blown off, you know, by 8 a.m. And that was the famous like VIX index, right? Which is a theoretical calculation based on like fake bid and offers from dealers, basically, you know, printed 63 or whatever it was, not an actual ticking price, but then the VIX future was traded at 38, which is like realistic. But, you know, those are those scenarios where that conditioning is how things go really wrong because you think you got it figured out and you don't. The most recent example, of course, has been, you know, this Trump collar dynamic where the market finally figured out what was the human VVIX, as I call him, you know, who, you know, the volatility.
You're
of volatility.
The only one who calls him. Yeah, that, you're the only one.
I need it on my coffee mug. You know, I have these like Nomura coffee mugs with some of my favorite sayings. Like human VVIX would have been a good one to trademark.
We'll but, trade you an Oddlots mug for a human VVIX Nomura mug.
That's done. That is done. Great. But like, you know, he views himself as having a mandate to disrupt the status quo of 80 years of Pax Americana. Like, and that's clearly like the approach here, right? So the prior distribution of outcomes is now out here. The quick learning from the market, however, after these initial series of vol shocks was that, okay, we found a pain point. You know, markets sold off to such an extent, the interest rate volatility, particularly in the long end, not just stocks. All right, you know, we've activated the Trump put. However, upon those compromises, the market rallies back. It increases his, you know, willingness to then lean back in from a negotiating ploy. So he's basically selling the call to fund the put. And when you have that collaring effect, you get the opposite dynamic, right? You get this realized vol compression, which is frankly a large part of what the past 2 months has been. So you're constantly reassessing how everybody thinks you're going to think, which is like you're anticipating the anticipators.
Of alternatives. PGIM's monthly podcast discussing trends and strategies in alternative investing.
There's no question that Mexico's preferential position in the new trade policy will drive incremental demand for industrial real estate and will sequentially drive rent growth as well.
There's more to uncover. Hear the full conversation on PGIM's podcast, Speaking of Alternatives.
This is what the market used to sound like. Pretty complex. But today, with iShares by BlackRock, investing is easier. With over 450 ETFs, iShares gives you easy access to countless market opportunities. iShares by BlackRock. The market is yours. Visit www.ishares.com to view perspectives, which includes investment objectives, risks, fees, expenses, and other information that you should read and consider carefully before investing. Risk includes principal loss prepared by BlackRock Investments, LLC, member FINRA.
So, have you heard the story about the prescription plan with savings automatically built in? It's where a family of any size can feel confident the cost of their medication won't hold them back. Go to cmk.co/stories to learn how CVS Caremark helps members save just by being members. That's cmk.co/stories.
So Joe asked you for basically color on the complexion of the market nowadays. And I know you just got back from, weren't you on some sort of crazy epic travel schedule
Yes.
where you flew around the world?
Yes.
What are you hearing from clients? Like, what kind of questions are they asking you?
People are so consensually macro bear, you know, on that stagflationary outcome.
Huh.
You know, and I think like that's one of the tricks. Like it's, you know, at first it was like, okay, you know, let's expect, you know, these early return, like mind you, you know, Smoot-Hawley terrifies, like 90-year terrifies,
yeah.
right? We, you know, prior to the you know, Trump 2.0, the effective rate was 2.4%. We're 17.3% right now as it stands, right? So like, you know, how does that not bleed through to this, you know, eventual price shock or margin compression, all this stuff that hits, you know, consumption? And, you know, initially it was, okay, midsummer. I think part of what's happening right now is that, you know, from a corporate perspective, as it relates to the consumer, is that Taco has changed their behavior too. Like why, you know, I'm not gonna blow up my top line sales and, you know, rush to, you know, price shock my clients at a time,
yeah.
you know? So I think there's been a lot of holding off too, as far as, or willingness to even absorb a little bit of that, the price, you know, increases that are coming through. And, you know, so it's been getting increasingly uncomfortable. All these left tail, most acute outcomes have certainly been mitigated away and compromised away and kind of handed away. The market starts rallying in your face. You're expecting this very bearish outcome. It's starting to hurt. You've underpriced the right tail. You get a fiscal deal seemingly close to being done, even just today, right? Late in the day, Section 899, which is this kind of like, you know, completely.
Tracy
like,
wrote a bunch about it.
Now
yeah.
it's all,
yeah.
now it's all now it's gone.
The revenge tax, right? Yeah. Yeah. Is there anything worse than like getting a bunch of work done and then having to trash it?
All I'll say is it's good for content.
Yes.
There we go.
Yes, it is.
And you talk a lot about hypotheticals over the past couple months.
For sure. Yeah. You know, you're well educated with your scenarios. But like in this case, you know, that was another, you know, this revenge tax escalation. Well, all of a sudden now, you know, cooler heads prevail. That increases the likelihood that the digital tax, you know, stuff with Europe that was an impediment for deals goes, you know, right way. So you've just had like left tails turn right tails and nobody has the exposure on. There's just so much chronic macro bleed. Now, perversely, you're seeing it with stocks. People are getting stopped in. You're buying the highs. You're having to take up your exposure, having to take up your nets after fighting it, kicking and screaming, and grossly undercapturing the rally. This is when it sets the table for crash. And that's why, as you're forced to get longer, you have to start hedge. You have to start hedging.
Do you think right now, I mean, I remember, well, like right now, today, would you say there's a lot of discretionary money where people feel like they're underweight the market, where they feel like they're still fighting this dynamic.
They're chasing it.
And they're still feel like, sure. Oh man, every day the stock market goes up. I don't have the exposure I wish I had.
Those are the classic buyers or higher.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's still out there.
But
they haven't fully capitulated yet.
But it's, you know, what you're seeing with the market grinding higher every day. And by the way, through the straddle, like, this is the interesting thing. I always say, like, we can't crash until skew is steep. Skew is a relative measure of kind of downside demand versus upside demand. You know, put skew, you know, demand for out of the money downside versus out the money downside. Both of those metrics in the past week have hit 100 percentile over the past year. The past year's had a lot of shit going on, right? So, you know, people are hedged because they are back getting long. Where things get spicy, and when you're hedged, that means dealers are, you know, short downside. They're going to be short gamma and short vega into a sell-off. That's accelerant flow. That feeds into the prevailing market momentum. The lower that we go, the more, you know, spot equities you have to sell. The higher the vol goes, the more vol you have to buy. Bad scenario. It's an accelerant flow in this case. The trick now that's starting to happen, and this is why I feel like we're probably getting closer to, you know, a crescendo, is that now you're getting spot the market up, vol up, and vol of all going up. And what that's telling me is that, okay, people are actually now being forced to chase into upside. right? And right now, part
that's
of
that's our chart for the newsletter tomorrow.
Yeah,
stocks, spot VIX, up, and volatile.
Spot yeah. up, vol up, v vol up. And what that means is that people are being forced to grab into the upside, and that's also feeding this short gamma move to the upside because dealers are short calls now. And this, you know, as we hit 6150, 6200, things like that. Ultimately, I always like to say when you get spot up, vol up in and of itself, it you know creates kind of like a melt up, like some sort of kind of you know squeezy rally on the way up that collapses under the weight of its own delta, like collapses under the weight of the mechanical buying on the way up, the mechanical dealer hedging on the way up, because you need to keep fulfilling that need and demand. People are getting longer. You know, you're finally seeing that dynamic. People are getting longer. That creates the potential de-risking flow on the way down, especially once you're talking about systematic vol scaling strategies that as vol goes higher, they have to just sell, you know, unemotionally.
But what would be a reasonable catalyst for that to happen?
Well, I think the near-term one has been, you know, the fact that, you know, July 8th, the original kind of reciprocal delay that, you know, and you saw a bunch of headlines today saying like that's flexible, morally flexible. You know, I think that...
Big surprise.
Yeah, no. Let's make a deal. I would say that right now that's kind of like the most obvious, you know, one out there that, you know, there's still some element of hardball. My view is that that's somewhat overstated, that is somewhat overstated because he needs to get one big beautiful bill passed first before that, and then potentially you can play the game. But the fact that this 899 was removed tells me that they know that getting a deal with Europe is probably, you know, a larger, you know, impediment to what they're trying to do. And that there still is now this new conditioning in the market where instead of like increasing the rhetoric at the highs, you know, Trump has capitulated back into Trump 1.0, which is like, you know, run hot, right? He's now, and they are, Bessent himself with the headlines out at the end of the day, they're trying to squeeze this thing higher. And financial conditions are easing. The dollar is moving lower. Long end yields have started rallying, ironically, because the market is sniffing, you know, a dovish turn within the Fed, you know, including recent comments from people that I don't think would have anticipated necessarily outside of Waller, who's auditioning for the Fed job. And, you know, why are they beginning to turn like that? Yes, there's a normalization dynamic with regards to where inflation is now. We think Jerome Powell is already at two dots, already, you know, for the end of the year. And there's just this modest turn, but they're turning for a reason. They're turning because, you know, quits rates and claims, you know, are starting to get a little wonky. And as I said, the whole American economic miracle goes wrong when the consumer cracks, and the consumer cracks is what, you know, becomes of, you know, the labor market. And that's starting to look, you know, precarious at best. So I don't think it's going to be a tariff headline necessarily. I think it's going to be, you know, good old fashioned data, a nasty NFP print, you know, that type of a thing. Is that an acute risk now? Probably not. Probably, you know, safe to say, you know, by August, you know, we could be getting spicy. And I think there's real delta, not just of like the first cut in September, but, you know, if that happens, you know, it's not just going to be, you know, 25 bips, right? So
everyone needs to keep shopping, I guess,
yeah,
to maintain the rally.
Do your duty.
So the thing is, though, this is what bothers me, is everyone sees some of these dynamics. We talk about the labor market weakness all the time. We talk about the fact that due to the tariffs and other factors, the Fed might be a little bit gun shy or less inclined to cut like than it otherwise would have given the set of economic conditions. And I think like Powell has sort of hinted at it before that there are conditions, like we all could see this. And yet people keep buying. Like it's sort of, there's something intellectually unsatisfying about the entire environment to me.
Well,
because like all this seems very true. All this, like the stagflation risk, there is going to be a cost of tariffs. There is this cyclical slowdown. And yet,
you know, it goes back to those, you know, kind of counterintuitive observations that we started off with, you know, where you get so fixated on the, like the left side that, you know, perversely, the corporate spending uncertainty becomes the biggest source of demand for stocks.
Yeah.
You know, and especially to the market structure stuff, which is just what I always come back to. Like once those puts start roasting because the worst case scenario doesn't happen and dealers got to start buying back that short delta, and then people start squeezing that short delta as the market starts rallying back, start buying short dated calls and dealers get short those calls and we go short gamma the other way. You know, those flows and, you know, frankly, you know, a world of, you know, not just this market structure that feeds momentum, right, with leveraged ETFs, you know, the prevalence of options trading, the tail wagging the dog.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if I can say tail wagging the dog now. I just think it is the dog.
I like that. That's good.
You know, options are the dog.
Yeah.
You know, those type of real and synthetic gamma effects in the market are, you know, very high impact. And I think at the end of the day, a lot of this is just about career preservation.
Yeah.
And when you've kind of missed badly on a call, people, it feels good. And, you know, in the macro space, like, I'm super sensitive to this idea. You know, you feel smart to make a bear call because it's rare. Stocks go higher.
Yeah, that's
you
right.
Know, when you run a back test, you know, and back testing, I know, is like a four letter word. But when you run a back test, you know, this happens and contingent on this, and you actually get negative forward returns over a series of average, over a real number of sample set. You know, it's an outlier. The problem is, like, sitting in a negative stance when, again, it goes back to that point, people are not really incentivized to see the world burn. You know, that's going to be a tough thing. So you got to be dynamic and pragmatic, I think, about these things.
All right. Yeah. Well, Charlie, let me just say thank you for giving us a couple of swear words to bleep out. Yeah. It really helps keep our producers on their toes. This has been another episode of the All Thoughts Podcast. I'm Tracy Alloway. You can follow me at Tracy Alloway.
And I'm Joe Weisenthal. You can follow me at The Stalwart. Follow our producers, Carmen Rodriguez at Carmen Armin, Dashiell Bennett at Dashbot, and Kale Brooks at Kale Brooks. For more Odd Lots content, go to Bloomberg.com/Odd Lots, where we have a daily newsletter and all of our episodes. And you can chat about these topics 24/7 in our Discord, discord.gg/oddlots.
And if you enjoy Odd Lots, if you like it when we do these live recordings, then please leave us a positive review on your favorite podcast platform. Thanks for listening.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.
So, have you heard the story about the prescription plan with savings automatically built in? It's where a family of any size can feel confident the cost of their medication won't hold them back. Go to cmk.co/stories to learn how CVS Caremark helps members save just by being members. That's cmk.co/stories.
Thrivent can help you plan your finances for the people, causes, and community you love. What makes Thrivent different? Financial services and generosity programs are combined to help you build the financial roadmap for the future, while also creating opportunities to give back along the way. Visit Thrivent.com to learn more. Thrivent, where money means more.
This is an iHeart podcast.